Good morning, everybody. It is September 21st, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. And today, in this part of the podcast, make sure you go check the other part of the podcast, too, where we talk about science curriculum and what kids are learning in science these days in American schools. But in this part, we are talking about Cruella. That's right, the Disney movie. There's something really interesting going on with Cruella, and I can't wait to share it with you. First, there are going to be a little bit of spoilers in this. So if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out, then come back and listen to the podcast, because there will be spoilers here. It's unfortunate, but really the only way to talk about a piece like this in depth and to really cover what we need to cover is to involve spoilers. It would be tough, for example, to talk about the Odyssey without knowing whether Ulysses or Odysseus makes his way back home or not in the end. So, yep, there will be spoilers. Sorry about that. I will pause now. Okay, so now you've gone, you've watched Cruella, and you are back here. At first, when I watched Cruella, I thought, wow, this is interesting because this is like a pretty good movie, a really good movie made by people who are obviously very good at making movies, but they don't seem to be very good at understanding how movies mean, right? Like John Chardy's great poetry text, How Does a Poem Mean? There is a way that movies mean, right? A way that art means. How does it get its message across? What does it stand for? What are its themes, its morals, its lessons? What's it good for? What can you take away from it? How does it state these themes? How does it accomplish what it accomplishes? This is a very important question. And the director of Cruella, by the way, is Craig Gillespie. Writers Dana Fox, Tony McNamara. Story by Aline Brosh McKenna, Kelly Marcel, and Steve Zissis. It's kind of a cool name, Zissis. So, at first, like I said, I was like, this is a strange disconnect between the skill with which this movie was made and what it actually means. The movie seems to be getting across some messages here that don't match up to what I had assumed its makers intended. And I thought, well, they must have made a mistake, because clearly in this movie, there are some messages that are really, really anti-woke, old school messages, and they couldn't possibly have meant those, so they must have had a mistake. But then I realized, wait, these are clever, very clever people. They're good at what they do. Maybe they do mean their messages that we're seeing here. Maybe they're doing this on purpose. And then when you look at Cruella that way, it goes from this confused movie to an extremely subversive movie. This undermines woke culture in a way that I don't think I've seen any other movie do. This is a strong statement against wokeism, and it really goes beyond wokeism back to its progenitor, political correctness. Now, I can hear everybody out there saying, hold up. This is a Disney movie. There is no way that a Disney movie is going to be anti-woke. Well, I have to tell you, I think there is. I think that they have done it. Now, they had to be really, really sneaky about it. They had to use the subtext, as the Cowan Coven would say. They had to be very Straussian about it. It's just a subversive movie. Now, when you watch it, you can see for yourselves. I will point out one piece. Such attention to detail in this movie that really convinced me that there wasn't anything in here by accident. So if you're watching this movie, about halfway through the movie, you see there are these two British thieves in here, and they're watching football, as they would say, on television. And the movie goes out of its way to point out to the audience that they are watching Tottenham Hotspurs. And they're huge, these two British thieves, are Tottenham Hotspurs fans. And of course, this is a reference to Harold Pinter's play The Dumbwaiter, where you have two British thieves who are waiting in this tenement, this rundown building, the basement, and they are Tottenham Hotspurs fans, and they're waiting for the action to start, just like in this movie here. You're waiting for the dogs to excrete the necklace, which is an absurd situation, right? And that's what the dumb waiter is about. When it's absurd situation. There could have been a million different football teams on the television at that point, right? If you wanted to keep with the color scheme, black and white, it should have been Newcastle on the television, right? The black and white stripes are iconic in that Newcastle kit. You could have had, to also keep with the color scheme, if you wanted to go with the red, you could have said the Red Devils in Manchester United. You could have said the Reds from Liverpool. They fit in with that color scheme, but they didn't. They went with Spurs, and it went out of the way to do so. It didn't even have to mention any team on the telly at all. It was not important to the rest of the movie in any way, shape, or form. The only reason it could be in there is something like a reference, and to add a lot more to the script without going into depth. So it does. Mission accomplished, right? Because you think of the dumbwaiter and you think that, oh, obviously they mean us to look at the dumbwaiter. You've got these two British people waiting for an absurd situation, two British thieves. They're Hotspurs fans. Oh, it's just like the dumbwaiter. There's a great John Travolta dumbwaiter out there. Did I say that already? I'm not sure. Go watch the John Travolta dumbwaiter if you haven't. And one of the big interpretations of the dumbwaiter is that it's all about individuals being destroyed or ground down by a higher power. And of course, that is exactly one of the complaints of the anti-woke crowd, is that individualism is getting ground down. It's getting destroyed by wokeism, and this conformity is oppressive and it's forcing everybody into it, and you can't survive it. You're just pressed into these absurd situations if you do try to resist, if you do try to be an individual. And once I saw that and I looked at all these other pieces of the movie, I was like, wow, I think they really do mean it. I really think that they snuck one past Disney and Craig Gillespie and Kelly Marcel and the other writers got this in there, and nobody at Disney, Kathleen Kennedy must not have been involved in this, nobody at Disney was watching. So let's go point by point through here. At one point, there is a Terminator scene. They have Cruella in a big van, and she's about to drive it into the police station to break out the two British thieves who are being held in the police station. And this is, she revs up the engine right in front of the police station. Her light beams or high beams are facing in right at the police station. It's sort of machine versus man, and it's obviously a reference to Terminator. But here's the thing. Are you kidding me? This weakens Cruella as a villain, right? Because she's not even close to Terminator. She is not going through this movie offing people left and right. She is, as far as villains go, of course, she's the protagonist of this film, but as far as raw strength and power, she is a much, much, much weaker character than the Terminator. And at first I saw this, I'm like, why are they undermining their own character? Why are they making her look weaker than this white male, powerful, beat 'em up bad guy? Well, I think it's because they're being anti-woke. Now, the next piece is, besides comparing her to the Terminator, where she's clearly coming up on the short end, is Cruella is saved by a white guy from the aristocracy. She is burning up to death. She is absolutely 100% going to die until this old white male, who is part of the old money, old aristocracy, he comes in and he saves her. He rescues her. It is the white guy rescuing this supposedly powerful, self-actualized woman. And again, when I saw it the first time, I was like, why are you sort of undermining your woke message here, powerful women, whatever, by requiring her to be saved? Everything she'd done would have been for naught, would have been for nothing, if this white guy didn't come in as some sort of deus ex machina and save you. Well, again, I think it's because they actually meant it. They actually meant that this Cruella needed, in some sense, to work with even old white guys. Now, I'm not saying that they aren't celebrating Cruella too. They are. She's a great character and she does great things in this, and she is a powerful woman. But they are absolutely purposefully weakening her, and they're not showing her as this scenery chewing, tear up the world, no limits on her, a woman, which you sometimes see in woke culture. Women can do it all. They're actually putting limits on her. You can see this when you compare her to the Emma Thompson character. The Emma Thompson character is a powerful villain. She is cruel. She murders people. She has this power over life and death. She does it by a whim. She is, has built an empire that is extremely far-reaching. She has taken over the old aristocracy, this Emma Thompson character. But that's the villain. That is the antagonist that we are not supposed to feel for in this movie. And again, in comparison to her, Cruella is not nearly as great a businesswoman. And in fact, she makes choices to go against her business career. Instead of trying to model herself after the Baroness, she goes a different path. And her path is toward family, away from business, toward family. And what does she get as her reward out of this at the end? The end of the very movie does not show her reward being this business empire. The reward shows her in her home with her family. This is the most anti-woke message you could possibly have, right? The woman is being sent back into her home, back with her family. She's not this business mogul. She is with her family. They make a point out of it, even to say, ooh, she played the family card. And she changes the name on the sign and makes it her own home. It's no longer the Emma Thompson, the Baroness's home. It is Cruella's home. And that's how she becomes happy. That's where she finds her happiness and her reward and her satisfaction and her self-actualization at the end of the movie. This is a Cruella character who spares the dogs. Again, the movie goes out of its way to point out that she doesn't make a coat out of the Dalmatians. She has the power to do it. She has the Dalmatians in her possession. She could easily make a coat out of it. She performs this great song and dance number. It's really good art where, you know, now I want to be a dog. Now I get to be a dog. Now I'm living as a dog. But even that is subversive because the two things it points out are, number one, she doesn't go all the way. She doesn't sacrifice everything for her career. She doesn't even focus on her career. She is not this extreme icon of unbridled power that Cruella is in the original Dalmatians movie, where she just goes around slaughtering dogs to make coats out of them. Again, that character is Emma Thompson, her character, the Baroness. What the Cruella character, Emma Stone's character, is doing here is she's staying on the leash. She is leashed for the whole movie. They never let her off the leash. They never let her just run ragged through the movie. She is constantly being held back, and the movie does that on purpose. How do you know they're doing it on purpose? Well, because, like I said, it happens again and again and again. They throw these things in there, the black and white color palette, black versus white. It's obviously talking about wokeism and addressing wokeism right there. How does Cruella eventually win? Well, she wins by being weak. She wins by getting killed, right? Of course, she is very clever about it. She manages to have a parachute or a paraglider, parasail, and she survives being pushed off the cliff. But again, she doesn't win by attacking. She doesn't win by going out and using her own power. She wins by letting herself get pushed around. She wins by letting herself get pushed off a cliff. And then what happens after she gets pushed off a cliff? How does she win by doing that? Well, she's framed Emma Thompson. She set up the Baroness character to be seen attacking her. And who sees her? Bunch of white guys. Bunch of old white male police see the crime. And then these authorities representing the establishment, representing the hierarchy of power that has been in place for the centuries since the Enlightenment, this constabulary comes in, this white male police force comes in, and they take the Baroness character and they take her away, right? So the most powerful woman in the film in terms of business power and in terms of the power over life and death, this person is taken away by the male establishment, the white male establishment, and they're wearing dark uniforms, of course, to continue the white versus black, or not white versus black, white and black motif, just the same way that Cruella's hair has white and black on the other sides. The police officers at the end, they've got, you know, the white faces, the white skin, and they've got the black uniforms. So they fit right into that color scheme, and they march right up and they take away this super powerful, super accomplished, super iconoclastic, I guess, character in terms of she's shattering the icons that the Enlightenment's held up for decades. And she gets captured by the establishment. And she starts to go mad. She starts to blubber. She starts to be put into this unhealthy mental state that Cruella has been flirting with all through the movie. Why? Again, because the white male establishment has taken her away and they lock her up. And then that is how Cruella wins, by once again, just like she was saved from the fire by the white males, she accomplishes her victory only through the power and the force and the strength of this established white male power structure. So I think that is terribly interesting that this super subversive movie was put out there. I haven't seen anybody else talking about this. It seems to be flying under the radar, and it certainly made it past Disney's radar. How did it get past Disney's radar? I'm not sure. I will point out one interesting fact, though. If you look at the people who made the movie, again, director Craig Gillespie, well, one of the writers who gets a story credit is Kelly Marcel. And Kelly Marcel wrote 50 Shades of Grey. Well, the movie for 50 Shades of Grey, not the book, obviously. But the movie, Kelly Marcel wrote that. And when you consider that in relation to the subversive message and themes that are coming out of Cruella, you can make some interesting comparisons, right? There's obviously the leash theme that we just talked about. Cruella really is never let off the leash here. She comes into Artie's shop, and there's this question about whether or not she really did kill the dogs. Did she rise above the dogs, exert her dominance over the dogs, sort of, and make a coat out of them? And Artie says, "You didn't." And she says, "I didn't." And sure, you can make the case that if Disney made a movie about a dog killer, then they'd be in big trouble with their audience. But you know what? Disney went that way. They chose to make a movie about Cruella. That is one of her defining character traits. That's what's made her this villain that lives in all our memories. She goes out there, and this is the villain who does kill the dog. And it's not as if killing dogs makes you someone that is beyond the pale, someone that you can't have feelings of sympathy for, right? At the end of plenty of things, right? Where the red fern grows, Old Yeller, you have to be able to kill the dog, right? Even in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, they are willing to sacrifice their AI. Well, he kind of sacrifices himself, but being willing to sacrifice your non-human sidekick does not automatically exclude you from being sympathetic in the eyes of the audience. They could have found a way for Cruella to be who she is in the old Dalmatian story and the old Dalmatians movie, going around making coats out of dogs. But no, they reined her in. They pulled her back. They put her, in some sense, in a collar, on a leash. And I contend that they clearly did it on purpose. There's just too much for it not to be on purpose, right? She is saved by the white guy twice. She's bound for certain death, bound for failure. She could not have defeated the villain without the white guy intervening and saving her, being the savior. They compare her to one of the most powerful white guy, old school, powerful characters in all of the movies, who, by the way, is exactly like Cruella in that he goes from a villain in the first movie to a sympathetic character in the second movie. That's the Terminator, and she ends up looking, of course, super weak compared to the Terminator. And there's this black and white palette going on. There's the comparison to the Tottenham Hotspurs and the dumbwaiter. And obviously it's talking about the theme of the individual getting crushed by this higher power, which is wokeism, grinding the individual down into dust. She finds happiness not in business at the end, but she gets her home, she gets her house, she gets her family. That's where she ends up. She doesn't end up in business or in any sort of military position or government position of authority. She goes back to her house. She chooses that, and she chooses her family over everything else. This is such a anti-woke movie, such a subversive movie. I really find it fascinating that it went through Disney and it has been brought out to market. So go see it. Enjoy it. Relish in it, even. I do not know when we will see its like again. That's it, folks. Check out the other podcast episode today, What Your Kids Are Learning in Science Class. I will talk to you soon. Take care.